Hey, discos. Need a little more Disgraceland in your life? Just a touch to get you through? Yeah, me too. This is the podcast that comes after the podcast. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party. This is our fourth little bonus episode. As most of you know, Disgraceland After Party is a new unscripted mini show that I started about a month ago, and I'm bringing it to you off the cuff on a bi-weekly basis to help bridge the gap between Disgraceland episodes. For those of you who don't know, this little mini spin-off show is where I briefly discuss the most recent eps of Disgraceland, Disgraceland subjects who are in the news, and share extra content, deleted scenes, and ideas for future episodes. I also answer the occasional email, provide context on music I'm listening to, books I'm reading, and other culture that I'm devouring at the moment. As this seems to be a question that I get often, Jake, what are you listening to? What are you reading? What are you watching? Etc. All right, let's get into it. Big thanks to everyone who came out to my set at Clusterfest in San Francisco. That was a ton of fun. Thank you very much. I'm stoked to be able to meet you guys. I'll be taking some time off from bringing Disgraceland to the stage until the fall. In October, I'm going to do a little book tour with appearances at various big and small bookstores throughout the country, multiple cities, and the plan is to pull off some sort of performance each night in the form of after party, just like this, but you know, the real life version. They'll be after the book events in small, intimate bars and going to have Disgraceland stories, bespoke Disgraceland cocktails, some sort of music element, and who knows what else, but more on this later. In the meantime, you can pre-order the book Disgraceland Musicians Getting Away with Murder and Behaving Very Badly right now on my website. Another big thank you to everyone who checked out the recently re-released April Fool's episode on Jim Morrison and the Zodiac Killer. I really appreciate the feedback. This is something new for me, attacking a story that is strictly satire, and I gotta say, it was a ton of fun to write and produce. All of it, everything from aligning the Doors touring off days to the Zodiac's kill dates to the music to the Godfather scene we paid homage to. We loved it. It's a lot of fun. For those of you who haven't heard the episode yet, here's the scene from the Jim Morrison episode that directly nicks the Godfather's famous baptism scene. She was up late at her college library, and Jim Morrison was waiting. Ray's keys played in Jim's mind like the organ at a pagan church. A demonic voice spoke out in Latin and whispered into his ear.
Amen. James, do you renounce the Lord of Christendom, God of colonial pigs, imperialist dogs, and capitalist pomp?
I do,
Jim whispered back.
Do you believe this God must be overthrown?
I do,
Jim said as he removed the distributor cap from Sherry Joe's car, ensuring that her car wouldn't start. He crouched down out of sight and waited. Somewhere nearby, a baby cried from an open window. Sherry Joe exited the library, and Mr. Mojo Rison hid quietly behind her car, coiled in attack mode. Sherry Joe stepped into her driver's seat. Her car wouldn't start. She realized something was wrong and stepped out. Jim, spraying from behind, tackled her, beat her perfect body bloody. To Jim in his manic fury, his memory wires had crossed. This murder brought on the total recall of the Lompoc kill from 3 years before. His brain synapses firing off like the familiar sound of those 22 shots from years earlier, replaced by the sound of his fist pounding Sherry Joe's flesh. All he heard were gunshots. Gunshots and the voice of the devil whispering in his ear.
James Douglas Morrison, do you renounce Jesus?
And Sherry Joe screamed, but nobody came. And in the chaos, his fists on her flesh sounded like a flurry of gunshots.
I do renounce him.
And all his works?
His knuckles to her ribs made a loud crack.
I do renounce them.
And all his promises?
I do renounce them.
More punches, more cracks, and she still hadn't gone limp.
James Douglas, will you pledge your soul to Satan?
I will.
In nomine Diaboli, et Filii, et Spiritus Satan. James Douglas, go in evil, and may Lucifer be with you.
Hail Satan.
That's Jim Morrison as the Zodiac Killer. Check out the full episode released on June 25th, 2019, if you haven't already. I hope to do more episodes like this in the future when the mood strikes. That's not to say that I won't give Jim Morrison his proper non-satire due. I will, likely within the 27 Club series that I'm planning on releasing after the next season of Disgraceland. 27 Club is going to be a season-long, 12-episode series on one musician who died at the age of 27. The first season is going to focus solely on Jimi Hendrix, his otherworldly talent, his batshit crazy hijinks, and his untimely death. As we delved into the research for these musicians who died at the age of 27, Hendrix, Morrison, Janis Joplin, etc., it became clear that it was going to be near impossible to tell the story of these artists in one episode. So I decided whole seasons are necessary. So get ready for a whole lot of Jimi Hendrix, a musician that I've been wanting to cover in Disgraceland for a while now. Speaking of Disgraceland musicians, Amy Winehouse is back in the news recently. It appears that the media has uncovered the real Valerie, the inspiration behind Amy's Mark Ronson-produced Zutons cover of the same name. The real-life Valerie is Valerie Starr, celebrity makeup artist who was seeing Zutons singer Dave McKaig at the time that he wrote the song. No idea how Amy got onto the track. Her version surpassed the Zutons on the charts and rose to number 2 overall, no doubt lining McCabe's pocket pretty well in the process. I wonder where Amy's inspiration came from, if Mark Ronson made her aware of the track, or if she saw the Zutons back in the day. In any event, here's a clip from the Amy Winehouse episode on Amy's days back in Camden during her formative years as a musician. Nighttime was not the right time. Not for Amy. Too much temptation, too slippery a slope. It wasn't always this way, though. Amy Winehouse used to own Camden nightlife, in her own couldn't-care-less kind of way. Camden nightlife itself was a different thing then as well. It was the epicenter of cool. The Northwest London neighborhood with its markets, record stores, and bookshops was home to a bar called The End that hosted a party on Monday nights called Trash. Errol Alkin, the visionary DJ host who launched Trash, revolutionized the UK nightclub scene with the genre-defying music he spun and the performers he booked. Trash propelled British club culture beyond tired Britpop, and it's where those two star-crossed lovers, the electric guitar and the big beat, the slutty electronic big beat, finally said, fuck it, and jumped in the sack together. The club's demise is too close in the rear view, but in years to come, music nerds who write about this sort of thing will come to recognize that Trash was as influential as the matinees at CBGB or the Velvet Rope Line at Studio 54. In the early 2000s, electronic music was no longer lame. More precisely, its offshoot, Electroclash, was the height of cool. If you were one of those people who thought drum machines or pre-programmed or triggered drums had quote-unquote no soul, you were either old, out of touch, or both. If you were lucky enough to make it past the fashion police at the door and into Trash on a Monday night, what you found writhing on the dance floor to the angular guitars and filthy beats of the Raptures, House of Jealous Lovers, or LCD Sound Systems' Losing My Edge was the sound of the new millennium, an urgent, sexier rock and roll, and the embodiment of soul. A jammed dance floor of stoned, sauced, sweaty, sexy 20-somethings, some of whom were about to write the future of pop music. Trash was basically a rehearsal space for the Libertines, the scruffy London indie band that defined rock and roll for a large swath of British teens. Acts like The Strokes, Kings of Leon, White Stripes, Peaches, and star-making DJ on the make, Mark Ronson, all hung out at Trash. All artists whose influence is felt widely in today's popular music. As I write this, the morning after the 61st Annual Grammy Awards, Mark Ronson and Anthony Rosamondo, the touring guitarist who replaced Pete Doherty in the Libertines, are busy sleeping off the high of winning the Grammy Award for Best Song for Lady Gaga's Shallow. How's that for influence? Also in the crowd of Trash on the regular, Amy Winehouse. All right, that was Amy Winehouse from the Disgraceland episode released on May 24th. Go back and check it out if you haven't already. All right, back in a flash. Yo, we're back. It's July 2nd. If you're listening to this on the day of its release, meaning that next week's episode on July 9th is on Cardi B. Lots of you are excited about this episode. For me, doing an episode on Cardi B is a no-brainer. She's big, boisterous, takes no shit, and has been, at times, criminal as fuck. And of course, she was in the news this past week. On Wednesday, June 25th, the musician released a video for her single Press, where she's living out a full-on life of crime, stone cold naked at times, all while officially pleading not guilty to assault charges in real life. Bold, brazen, nothing new for Cardi B, who has been indicted on 14 charges, two of them felony. And here's a clip from the upcoming episode. In the fall of 2018, the guest list for Harper Bazaar's annual Fashion Week soiree at Manhattan's prestigious Plaza Hotel listed Cardi B's name, along with an Uber A-list of guests, including Kendall Jenner, Justin Theroux, Russell Westbrook, Meek Mill, and OG Uptown Girl, Christie Brinkley, among others. Cardi was distracted on the red carpet. Nicki Minaj, that first-class pain in the ass, was gonna be there. Nicki and her Barb's BS, along with her low-key disses on Instagram, liking posts that disparaged Cardi's flow, etc. It all had Nicki Minaj on Cardi B's last nerve. But the offense that had Cardi most upset was Nicki's supposed diss of Cardi's parenting. After Cardi had created one, if not the most successful debuts by a female hip-hop artist while pregnant, and had then decided against going on the road with Bruno Mars, turning down a massive payday in order to stay home with a newborn baby, culture, and to rear that baby, bond with that baby, and raise that baby. Fuck Nicki Minaj and her Pink Friday Barbie bullshit. Nicki was decked out in a sequined tiger print gown straight off the runway, her hair blonde, maximum vamp. And Cardi strolled the red carpet in a massive Dolce & Gabbana gown, scarlet with ruffles, announcing her arrival with the subtlety of a diamond-encrusted sledgehammer. Her blood-red platform heels killed and were killing her. She was in no mood. So when someone stepped on the train of her dress, Cardi B's blood boiled. And when she turned around to see that that someone was who she believed to be Nicki Minaj, Cardi lost it. All right, that's Cardi B coming at you on July 9th, and I'll be coming at you right after this.
We'll be right back after this word.
All right, so my favorite part of the show, what I'm listening to, what I'm watching, and what I'm reading. If this was real life and not some podcast, this would be the time of the night where at the bar, we'd be sitting there and I'd be going on and on and on about some TV show I'm stoked to be watching, some music I'm stoked to be listening to. Probably boring you. Probably be having you like, what the hell is this? Why is he so fucking excited about fucking this goddamn Clive Owen thing? I don't know. It's the way I've always been. My friends know what I'm talking about. It's partly why I do this podcast and Disgraceland as well. So I just want to say, stoked to be at Clusterfest and around so many great comedians who have made some truly great television over the years. Alana Glazer from Broad City, Fred Armisen from Portlandia, Amy Poehler from Parks and Rec, SNL, a bunch of others. And oh yeah, my favorite murder who performed on Sunday night at Clusterfest. That reminds me, shout out to Karen and Georgia for the big Disgraceland ups from their most recent Oslo episode. Check that out if you haven't already and if you love Norwegian black metal. But back to television. When is my favorite murder getting a television show, by the way? Wouldn't surprise me if there was already one in the works. Okay, TV for me at the moment is all about Fleabag. I've got one episode to go in season two, which I believe is the end of the series. I can't stop thinking about this show. Is it as good as I think it is? It's certainly compelling and creatively. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the show's creator and star, is doing things that I've never seen on television before. But do I like it? I think I do. I think I like it a lot. But at times, it's a confrontational watch. It's hard to watch at times. But overall, throughout it all, it's laugh-out funny, sick and depraved in my exact kind of humor. So check out Fleabag if you have not already. Also, don't tell anyone, but I'm watching a little-known show called Friends. You know why? Because I hated this show when it was on television back in the day. These characters were the opposite of where I was coming from. They were middle of the road, watered down, safe. They repped easy answers to what I then thought were uneasy problems to solve. Things like falling in love, paying rent, finding a career. It wasn't angsty enough for me. How angsty in 90s of me. But Friends recently has fascinated me. It's the most streamed show on Netflix for a reason. New generations and audiences from all over the world can't get enough. Why? What is it? I wanted to know, so I finally decided to watch the show with my wife at night right before we pass out. We're about three seasons in, and I totally get it. Friends was mainstream America's window into 90s youth. Light angst, funny, stupid, impossibly good-looking, and yes, safe. No wonder it was a massive hit. Can't say for how long I'm going to hang with Phoebe, Monica, Chandler, Joey, Rachel, and Ross, but for the time being, the show is a good palate wash at the end of my days filled with reading and writing about truly dark individuals. So, in case any of the cast members at Friends are really like in dire need of some extra residual royalty checks, I'd like to give this plug for that little-known television show. It's called Friends, F-R-I-E-N-D-S. It originally appeared on the NBC network and can be streamed on Netflix right now. Go check it out. Support those kids. All right, speaking of dark, I recently rewatched the 2013 crime drama Blood Ties with Billy Crudup and Clive Owen, and it's better than I remember. Go watch this film, then get the soundtrack and listen to it nonstop like I'm currently doing. Ace Frehley, The Rubettes, and the crushing soul ballad Do What You Gotta Do by Al Wilson. Amazing. Blood Ties, the film, and the soundtrack. Go get some. I'm about to head on vacation and hopefully read the new James Ellroy book entitled The Storm. I'm bringing it with me, and I will report back on that shortly. All right, how about some listener feedback? This email is from Georgia, who writes, Jake, I've listened to all your podcasts on Disgraceland, and I'm a fan. I travel every week on planes for work, where the majority of my listening takes place. As for the latest episode about JM and the Zodiac Killer, you got me hook, line, and sinker, all caps. I knew both stories individually. I also listened to all of Payne Lindsay's work and took in every word of your story. Ironically enough, the punchline came as I was landing at O'Hare Airport, and I could not contain my laughter and delight at your ability to reel me in. I'm sure my seatmate thought I was nuts. Good job, Jake. Keep them coming. Thanks, Georgia. I appreciate you taking the time to write, and I appreciate everyone who dug on the Jim Morrison Zodiac Killer episode. Thanks for being open-minded. More to come. Next. Okay, I've got San Francisco on the brain because you know I was just there for Clusterfest and the Zodiac Killer episode is obviously set in part of San Francisco. No, by the way, how crazy is it that the cop who investigated the Zodiac Killer, the one played by Mark Ruffalo in David Fincher's Zodiac movie, has had multiple movies made about him? The Zodiac, of course, by David Fincher. And then there's the movie Bullet, where the same cop is portrayed by Steve McQueen. And finally, there are the Dirty Harry movies with Clint Eastwood, which, if I'm correct, and I believe I am, are also based on the same San Francisco cop. Crazy. So with that, some San Francisco nostalgia. Here we go. From the classified telephone directory for San Francisco, including Bay Shore, Brisbane, Colma, and Daly City, July 1951. Aaron Lewis L. 25 Taylor 5-6440. Aaron and Meyer 25 Taylor 5-6440. AIDS Robert E 5-2340. Colombo and Sons Accordions 126 Columbus Ave. SUTTER 1-50993. American Accordion School HE 1-8284. Acoma Rentals Accordions rented all sizes. We also buy, sell, trade 120 Market 2-2140. Alexander DeWell 100 Blush 2-2765. Alexis Allen 225 Blush 1-7348. Anderson Arthur 1-2.
Quit talking and start mixing.
Cut it!